Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. All rights reserved. Chapter 7. Once Billy and Callie finished the cat rooms, they turned their attention to the rest of the house. As she watched him sand floors, paint, and build bookcases, she couldn't imagine anything that he couldn't do. Emboldened by his knowledge and willingness to learn, even with his limits, she went out and bought a small front loader. "Why do you need a tractor?" Billy sighed when he saw it parked in the driveway. "I'm tired of carrying buckets of sand to and from the old sand pit." Not long after Callie had moved back to the farm, she discovered that the clay litter she bought for the cats wasn't biodegradable. That elicited a revolting image of a Matterhorn of cat waste in her yard, which, in turn, reminded her of the old sand pit about a quarter mile from the house. Picking up clean sand and dumping soil there seemed like such an ideal solution that she'd slowly traded the cats over to sand, which he carried to and from the pit in large plastic buckets. However, after banging her shins with the heavy buckets numerous times, she decided that a small front loader would solve the problem even better. Once she learned how to operate it, of course. With the manufacturer's manual and Billy's help, Callie mastered mini front loader operation in one afternoon, destroying only 4 small shrubs and slightly denting the rear fender of the van in the process. After that, she truly enjoyed bouncing through the woods twice a week with her load of soiled sand, then returning with a clean batch to fill the cat boxes. At least she enjoyed it until she bounced into the yard one day and discovered Joe McDermott's truck backing into the driveway with a load of wood. "Stop!" she screamed, not wanting him to dump the wood next to the cat room where numerous furry faces peered out expectantly. "What? What's wrong?" he shouted. He slammed on the brakes and leaped out of the truck as she leaped off the front loader and charged up to him to keep him from coming in any closer. "I don't want you to dump the wood there," she smiled at him pleasantly. "Christ, I thought I'd run over your cat." "I don't have a cat," she lied. "What about the gray one that was in the house when I was here the last time?" He eyed her suspiciously. "Oh, that's just a stray who hangs around sometimes," she replied calmly. "She's not my cat." "So where do you want the wood?" She hadn't a clue. "Behind the barn," she answered, because that was the first thought that came to her mind. "You want to haul wood all the way from there in winter?" "It's good exercise." He shook his head, then remarked, "Nice little front loader. You excavating something?" She looked at the scoop filled with sand. "Bonsai," she lied again. "I'm into bonsai." "Aren't they miniature trees?" he asked, peering at her more strangely than ever. "Normally," she replied, "but I prefer big bonsai." "Oh," he said. Then he got back into his truck, dumped the wood, and drove away. After Callie added hauling and stacking the wood someplace closer to the main house to her do list, she went back to cleaning litter boxes while Billy continued repairing holes in the foundation under the main house. When they finished, she reminded him that whoever was closest to the cat room should draw the drapes when anyone arrived. "Joe wouldn't tell," Billy signed his reply. "I don't want anyone to know," she explained. Seeing the troubled look on his face, she added, "It's better this way, just until I get settled in." That seemed to satisfy him, and for the next month they worked their way through the house with few interruptions. Billy particularly liked it when Callie asked him to help select the colors for the trim in each room. When she solicited his help stenciling a simple leaf design around the living room windows, he thought he'd died and gone to heaven. Then disaster struck. One night, Alicia sprawled on top of Callie in bed while she read, and Callie automatically began stroking the cat, then rubbing her tummy when she rolled over and purred. At first, she told herself she didn't feel any hard little lumps in the cat's abdomen because she couldn't face what that meant. But eventually, professional responsibility forced her to right the cat, palpate her properly, and come to a sound medical conclusion. "You dumb cat! You're pregnant!" she shouted, causing all of the other sleeping felines to open their eyes and glower at her. "How could this happen? Alicia and Rick can't have babies. They've spent thousands at fertility clinics trying to have babies in test tubes." Of course, Callie knew how it had happened. Aside from confusing Alicia and Rex, the infertile Californians, with Alicia and Rex, the New Hampshire cats, the implications of which she did not want to consider, she had become so involved in finishing the house that she had forgotten all about the two cats after she pulled them out from under the toilet. Had a client offered such a lame excuse, she would have snorted in disbelief and given the miscreant the irresponsible pet owner lecture. Once Callie discovered Alicia's condition, she told herself she should spay the cat immediately because the one thing she didn't need was more cats. Then another, even more compelling reason to do this occurred to her. Kitty incest. Dear God, what if Rex is Alicia's brother as well as the father of her babies? She wailed. But in spite of fleeting images of two-headed kittens, she couldn't bring herself to terminate Alicia's pregnancy. While Rex might be the father, there were surely other males who could have had their way with Alicia before she and Billy sealed up the holes in the foundation and she made Alicia a house cat. So instead of terminating the cat's pregnancy, she put several jumbo shrimp out for the still free-roaming Rex the next morning, and when he came to eat them, she grabbed him and neutered him. Alicia's five kittens arrived 3 weeks later. She went into labor early in the afternoon, and it soon became apparent that she couldn't deliver the large kittens through her small pelvic canal. Although Callie never expected to do a cesarean section on the counter in her makeshift treatment room, Billy proved an able assistant. While he monitored Alicia's breathing and color, Callie performed the familiar surgery, and the mother and young came through the procedure with flying colors. Later that evening, a very tired and contented Callie sat in her newly decorated living room with Alicia at her feet, nursing her babies in the wooden box Billy had made for them. Before she knew what had happened, her eyelids closed and she fell asleep. Bam! What the? Callie leaped off the couch, looked out the window, and saw Joe McDermott walking toward the house. Obviously, the sound of him slamming the door of his truck had awakened her. With lightning speed, she shoved the box containing Alicia and her kittens behind the couch, scooped up Bernice and George, who had sneaked into the house with the new mother, and tossed them in the cat room. George, being George, scratched her. Unfortunately, she didn't notice this until she opened the kitchen door to greet her uninvited guest. "You're bleeding," he announced when he saw the blood trickling down her arm. "Joe, what do you want?" she asked. That he cared that she was hurt bothered him sufficiently that he immediately reverted to jerk mode. "I know you don't go in for rituals, but I'm an old-fashioned kind of a guy." He held up the bottle of red wine. "I originally came over here with the idea of getting you drunk so you'd fuck me, but maybe if I save you from bleeding to death, you'll feel grateful enough that I won't have to. Then you won't need to endure any useless ritual, and I can save the wine for someone who appreciates my sensitivity." "Go away, I'm bleeding," she mumbled, sucking her right arm while she struggled to pull a paper towel off the roll with her left hand. "Geez, don't use a paper towel. Don't you have any Band-Aids?" "Yeah, but they're in the bathroom and this person came to the door just as I was going to get one," she lied. "Well, don't just stand there bleeding. Get one," he ordered. By the time she returned to the living room, Joe was sitting on the couch and had already poured two glasses of wine. "Wood burning all right?" he asked the inane question as he handed her a glass of wine. "Burns pretty much like wood, far as I can tell," she replied as she accepted the glass. Suddenly, he sneezed. "Do you have allergies, Joe?" she asked, thinking that a nice allergy to wood smoke would terminate his visit. "A few, especially to cats. You have any cats around here?" "The woods are loaded with feral cats." "No, I mean here, in the house." "I told you before, I don't have any pets, but," she added as Gwendolyn suddenly leaped onto one windowsill and Sanford and Rex leaped onto another and all three cats stared at them, "some of the feral cats are friendlier than others." He sneezed again just as she heard a soft tap, tap, tap at the window. "What's that?" he asked. "What's what?" she countered innocently. Tap, 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 slightly louder this time. "What's that?" he sneezed. Up until that moment, Callie had considered it the cutest thing when Gwendolyn would tap on the window with her paw. So cute, in fact, that she would open the window and give the cat a treat when she did it. Tap, tap, tap. "Pretty aggressive feral cats you have around here," Joe commented between sneezes. Callie rushed to the window shouting, "Shoo! Shoo!" and snatched a tin filled with cat treats from the bookshelf on her way by. She rattled it frantically while Gwendolyn looked at her in quiet anticipation. Even when she flung open the window and threw the entire contents of the container and then the tin itself on the ground below, where Sanford and Rex immediately materialized. Gwendolyn politely meowed her thanks as always before jumping off the sill, and Callie slammed the window. "That'll take care of them," she announced, then quickly changed the subject. "Far be it from me to interfere with your social life, Joe, but I read somewhere that wine makes allergies a lot worse. I think it's because of the sulfates in it." "Thanks," he snuffled, blowing his nose. "I'll remember that. You sure you don't have any cats inside?" "I told you I don't," she repeated, then noticed Alicia's head peeking around the corner of the couch. "Except for that one by your left foot. But she's not mine. She's just a stray passing through." Joe looked down at the cat staring up at him and sneezed again. "How come she looks so funny?" "I did a C-section on her today." "Oh, I guess that would explain it." His eyes began to water. "A C-section? Doesn't that mean babies?" "Well, yeah. They're in a box behind the couch." He turned and peered over the back of the couch. "There are five of them in there," he wheezed as he instinctively reached out to pet the kittens, then pulled back. "You said you didn't have any cats."
"I don't have any cats," she repeated. "The mother needed help, and I helped her. Once she's feeling better, she and the kittens are history."
Joe sneezed again, drained his glass, picked up his bottle of wine, and left. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.